welcome to the MRP Tech Podcast. This is episode 108, and this is the weekly podcast discussing everyday tech for everyday people. My name is Matt. I am the host of this show, and with me today, I have a very exciting guest host for this episode. I've been looking forward to this episode for a while, and many people on our Discord chat room have as well. I'd like to welcome to the show Larry Bushy from the Going Linux Podcast. Hi, Larry. How are you doing today?
Hey, Matt. Thanks for having me on. I'm doing great.
Yeah.
How are you doing?
I'm doing really great. It's been a really busy couple of days, but it's hot and humid, but we're excited to talk some Linux tonight. So for those of you who are listeners of my show and you for some reason you're not familiar with the Going Linux Podcast, the Going Linux Podcast is probably one of the most popular Linux podcasts out there, and I've been wanting to get a Linux expert on the show for a very long time. And the first person that I thought of was Larry from the Going Linux Podcast. So, Larry, let's start just by, for any of those listeners out there who aren't familiar with you, what do you do for a living? Who are you? What do you do?
Okay, well, I am employed by Salesforce, a cloud-based platform for enterprises to run their business on, essentially. And having said that, I also have to say that the opinions expressed on this podcast and on any forums and social media sites are mine and don't necessarily reflect the opinion of my employer. Likewise, the political positions and public opinions expressed by my employer and its executives do not necessarily reflect mine. So, with that disclaimer out of the way,
absolutely.
Let's move ahead.
Yeah, good to get that out of the way first, and just to make sure everybody's on the same page. And okay, so you are, you said Salesforce is the company you work for?
Yeah.
Okay.
Salesforce is the company I work for. I'm a consultant with them in the customer success group. And I'm calling you from a hotel room on an engagement with a customer right now. So there you go.
And that's incredible. And thank you for your time tonight. I know you have a busy schedule, and we finally were able to line things up. And just to give you a start of where I want to go at the beginning of this episode, I have been a big fan of the Going Linux Podcast for at least, I would say, 4 years now. I started listening to your show around the time that the Computer America show was going on as well. And so
you would
publish the Going Linux Podcast and the Computer America show. How did you get into podcasting, and why is podcasting something that you choose to do on a biweekly basis?
Yeah. So I started podcasting before podcasting was invented, actually. At a previous employer, I was the trainer / tech guy / computer nerd kind of guy. One of my coworkers and I decided that as part of that, we needed to help the sales and service organization, which the two of us supported, needed some help with adopting computers. They were relatively new in a business environment for the company I worked for. And so we decided that we would send out these tech tips, except that we didn't really have the internet to send it out on at that point. So we did it by voicemail, if you will.
Wow.
If you can believe that. Yeah. So we recorded 3-minute voicemail messages, because 3 minutes was the maximum length of voicemail. But we crammed a tech tip for, at the time, Windows computers into 3 minutes and sent it out on a weekly, I think it was, basis. Maybe it was monthly. I don't know. But it's a long time ago. So that's how I got into podcasting. Of course, podcasting was invented in 2004, and I immediately started podcasting the Windows tips in a lengthened version, both to the company I worked for as well as out on the internet for everyone at that point. And that podcast kind of died when my website was taken over, and I eventually ended up leaving that company and joining Salesforce, and here I am here. So I started with the Linux podcast back in 2005, I think was the very first going Linux podcast.
Wow.
And yeah, and right about that time, before that, about a year before that, I got into Linux and really liked what I saw and really got heavily into it and decided I needed to do the same thing for Linux users that I had been doing for the Windows users at my previous company. And so that's how the Going Linux podcast was born, just out of a need to help people to adopt an operating system that at that time very few people had heard of.
That's really interesting that's how you got your start. That's basically how I got my start. I never expected to sort of do the podcasting thing, and I worked at a school district, and I was sort of the go-to help guy.
Yep.
You know, I'm a music teacher in my day job, but I'd also assist other faculty and staff with their tech issues when the IT guys weren't there. And so I started making, you know, videos to help them out, and realized it was kind of fun. And so it's really interesting. We both kind of got the start in the same way. And
same sort of thing. Yeah, that's great.
So let's talk about the Going Linux podcast. You got into Linux. You started using Linux. Do you remember the first Linux distro that you started out testing?
Yeah, I tried to start with Mandrake Linux because I picked up a book with Mandrake, and then I found out that it had been discontinued. So... So I, you know, rather than go over to Mandriva or whatever it happened to be at that time, I think is what they had moved to, I found the OpenSUSE distribution.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought that looks kind of interesting. And I had this old ThinkPad computer that I was using at the time for my personal use. And it had a limited hard drive. Had a floppy disk and no CD. So wow. I thought, oh man, I'm going to have to install this with floppy drives, floppy disks. But I did. I forget how many floppy disks it was. I think it was 9 or something like that. But I got it installed and it worked great out of the box.
That's awesome.
And yeah, and then I found the magic of USB drives.
Yeah, I'll say. Linux was probably much more difficult to install back then than it is now.
Yeah, it was a little more difficult, mainly because of the fact that you had to install it from a CD or from a series of floppy disks. But other than that, not a lot has changed with the way you install it, except that today you can install it from a USB drive.
Yeah.
Other than the fact that the installation process has gotten a lot smoother with automatic partitioning and even automatic setting up of dual boot if you want it that way. If you've already got Windows installed and you want to install Linux alongside it and use it, that has become very, very simple. And even with today's computers that no longer use BIOS, they're using UEFI, that has become extremely easy as well. So just the ease of installation, but the process is basically the same. You boot to a live environment of some sort, and optionally you can try it out or you can install it and sit back and wait for the rest is basically it.
Yeah, and you know, Linux has come a long way. You know, and you'd be surprised how many people I ask who when they started using Linux, and a lot of people that I talk to say Mandrake or Mandriva. That was before my time. I started using Linux in probably 2009 with Ubuntu 9.04. And I just kind of fell in love with it from the very beginning. And I tested it on all my machines. And the reason I started using Linux is because as a teacher, as a musician, I did not want to spend the thousands of dollars on proprietary software. And exactly. And so I started finding things like, you know, the Photoshop alternatives of GIMP and, and you know, the open source audio editors and the video editors. And all of a sudden it just occurred to me, I wonder if there's an open source operating system. And I, you know, I'm sort of kicking myself because I've always been into tech stuff, but I never really heard about the Linux thing. And I wish I would have heard about it 10 years sooner, you know, and but just since I started, Linux has come so far, and it's in just keeps getting better and better every day. So having something like the Going Linux podcast, where you have a every 2 weeks a new topic to teach people about Linux and why to use Linux, I mean, it's such a great aspect, you know, a venue for you to podcast and talk about. And what's like the most exciting thing about doing the podcast that you love the most?
Well, I think that the part that I enjoy the most is getting feedback from the listeners. And, you know, when we first started off, we had a number of episodes, and we kind of alternated between the listener feedback episodes and what we call the user experience episodes, where we actually take a topic and teach people about Linux or discuss a topic that's of interest to people. And we've continued that during the time that I also was on the Computer America show. We kind of added those in between, and so we had three episodes a month instead of two. But we still alternated between the user experience episodes and the listener feedback episodes. But just getting the feedback from the listeners kind of validates that I'm doing the right thing. Not all of the listeners we started with are still listening to the show, as you can imagine. The show tends to be for more new users, and as users of Linux become more mature in their use of the platform, they end up kind of not needing the kind of topics that we have. And yet we have people who have been around since the beginning and have said, I never miss an episode because you guys make it so easy. And even though most of what you're talking about I already know, I enjoy listening to the topics and the questions and the answers you guys give. And, you know, quite frequently we have those listeners correct the answers that we give.
Well, you know, that's a great part about having active listeners who participate. Yeah. You know, you get to be corrected, you get to, you know, everybody makes mistakes, and you you learn from them and move on. And you know what I was just going to say to you is the more advanced people, you know, I don't consider myself, you know, a know-it-all. I don't know everything, but when I listen to your show, I really enjoy the topics that you cover. And, you know, you do such a good job reviewing everything that when you put it all together, there may be something that I, you know, I'm self-learned. So I self-taught. Nobody taught me how to use Linux. So there might be that one key item in there that I miss, or the one interesting way that you figured out how to do it that I never even thought of. So it's even as a more advanced Linux user, you know, I think about it as, you know, I'm always learning something new, a little trick here or there that you throw in. So that's why I still listen to the show.
Yeah, and that's kind of the hook, right?
Yeah, totally.
try to keep it relevant. And there's always something new in computing. There's new hardware or new ways of doing things or new applications. And like you said, for those of us that are self-taught, and I include myself in that group, we learn things one way. We tend to stick to those ways unless we find a better way to do it. And I listen to a lot of podcasts, not all on Linux, but quite a few of them on Linux, and I'm always learning something new from those podcasts.
That's
and
the best part
I'm always
of listening to podcasts.
Exactly. And I'm always tinkering around with computers and hardware and software, and I'm getting inspiration from all kinds of places as to, you know, that would be a good topic for a computer user just learning to use Linux. I think we'll make that into a show, or at least include that as a tip on one of the shows or something. So that's kind of how they come together.
That's really great. And so the Going Linux podcast wouldn't be the Going Linux podcast without your co-host. Let's talk a little bit about Bill. How did you and Bill meet up, and how did he become a host of the show?
Yeah, good question. So Bill started off when I had Tom as my co-host. And Bill came on the show kind of as a guest presenter, if you will.
Okay.
And he came on kind of as a third voice. We dubbed him the Chief Executive Minion, because we needed a title for him, right?
That's right.
And I don't remember whether it was Bill or it was Tom came up with that, but one of us did. And then Tom actually got ill and left the podcast, and Bill took over his shoes as co-host. And that's many years ago now.
Yeah,
it seems like it was just yesterday, but and other times it seems a long time ago. So he's been a co-host for a while.
It's been quite a while. That you're right, that he has been on the show. And if I'm not mistaken, Bill is a ham radio operator. Am I right?
He definitely is. He is a ham in all senses of the word, but
yes.
he is a ham radio operator for sure. He's also a gamer. I noticed we're using Discord here. He's got me into Discord, not for gaming, but for communicating back and forth. And
yeah,
so
the live chat of Discord is really awesome, and I love it. So just being once again an avid listener of the show, you know, if you could extend this to Bill, that you know, just that 7-3 that he does at the end of every episode, you know, that's sort of got me hooked on wanting to become a ham radio operator myself, and listening to a few other podcasts too. There is a big correlation between Linux and amateur radio. A lot of Linux guys, a lot of amateur radio guys use Linux software when they're building their digital radio stations. And so that, you know, in one way or another, ultimately led to me getting my amateur radio license. So,
congratulations.
Thanks. And so pass on that 73 to him, and a thank you when you talk to him next, because he was a motivation for me to try something that I had absolutely no idea about when I first started. I wanted to try something new, and I wouldn't say I was bored with Linux, but I wanted to venture off into something new. And so I just dove right into amateur radio, and now I've got my extra license and help out the local amateur radio club. So
great.
So pass that on to Bill and tell him I said thank you for the inspiration.
I definitely will.
So okay, so you sort of talked about you used to work with Windows, and he's touched on it a little bit, but why do you use Linux? Why is Linux important to you?
Well, for some of the same reasons that you cited, you got into Linux. I didn't want to spend a lot of money on stuff,
exactly.
Right? So, I had this old computer, and I was looking for something to put on it. And I thought, okay, well, I can get a license of Windows. And I had actually purchased a computer several years earlier with Windows 95 on it. I had earlier versions of Windows, actually Windows 3.1, I think. But the first usable computer I had was with Windows 95 on it. And then I kind of upgraded to 98 and to later versions. I kind of skipped over ME. And, you know, so most of those licenses I got through my work, because, you know, Microsoft likes to give employees of companies that standardize on Windows licenses. Of course. So I was able to do that, and I was thinking, this isn't sustainable. This is just not, this is not great. I know Windows fairly well, but I really, I don't feel right putting Windows on here and using somebody else's licenses. So I took a look, I looked for a free operating system in the same way you did. I had been using, open source software. Before that, I had been using shareware and other things that were free license software before that. And I thought, there's got to be an open source operating system. So let's take a look. And so that's when I started investigating and found Mandrake. And then I found OpenSUSE. And then I found Kubuntu. And then, you know, as soon as I had found Ubuntu and Kubuntu, I realized now Linux has gotten to the point where the average computer user can use it. And that's the time that it kind of stuck with me that this podcast is going to go on for a long time. So that's why I started using Linux. And the more I found out about what it could do, and that in addition to the operating system being available for no charge, most, if not all, of the applications are available at no charge. And more importantly than that, just about any kind of an application you want to find for Linux is available for Linux. And it may be the same program that's written for Windows and Mac, but it may not be. And some of the features may not be there, but the most important ones are, and that's really what counts.
Okay, so let's give you an example. Let's say you have someone you're working with, or a relative, or just a friend that heard about your podcast or mm-hmm. heard about you using Linux, and they sort of want to test the waters, but they're not sure where to start. How do you encourage first-time users to start trying Linux out?
Okay. Well, you skipped over the hard part, which is getting people interested in trying Linux.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But to answer your question, the way I encourage people to learn about Linux is getting them interested in asking questions and not trying to dig in too deeply. So I try to set the expectation that things are going to be different. If you've been using Windows and you switch to the Mac OS, you're going to have some adjustments. If you've been using Mac all your life and you switch to Windows, you're going to have some adjustments, because not all the same software is available and it doesn't work the same way. Same thing switching to Linux. You've got some adjustments, so expect it. And if you have questions, ask, or listen to a podcast, or go on the internet and Google whatever it is you're having problems with. These days you can do that and you'll find an answer. And again, if it's somebody that I know, if it's somebody that I've been working with and they're interested and they want to pick up the phone and call me, yeah, that's what happens. They just encourage them that way. Encourage them not to get discouraged. And setting the expectations up front is probably the most important thing. Expect that there will be differences, enjoy the differences, and look for the benefits in what you can do in Linux that you can't do on Windows, or you can't do on Mac, or that this particular application does differently or maybe better than a similar application you may be used to, or maybe it does it better because it is better all around because it's not available for those other platforms, or it's available in an inferior way on those other platforms. So that's really it, setting those expectations up front and encouraging people as they go through. It's a lot like education, right? Just standard education like you've described. Absolutely. It as a teacher. Yep.
I think it's really important to point out that no OS is perfect. That every OS has their strengths and their weaknesses, and so you there's no perfect solution for anything. And if you are someone who likes to experiment, someone who likes to tinker, someone who likes to learn, you mentioned about Googling the answers that you, or the questions that you have to find answers.
Right.
I think it's very important that somebody who is like a lifelong learner, somebody who wants to keep learning it as even out of school, and they want to learn some new things. Linux is a great place to learn about technology, the place to learn about software, developing all those different types of things, developing software. And you can't expect everything to be perfect. There's going to be bumps along the way, but that's sort of the fun of it, isn't it? You know, just trying to learn and get around all those little hiccups that happen once in a while.
Well, absolutely. And in the days when I was helping people to learn how to use Windows, it was the same thing. And it is the same thing still today. I mean, Leo Laporte has made a career out of helping people with their Windows issues, right?
Exactly.
And he's been doing it for decades. And so, no, and like you said, no operating system is perfect. And Linux isn't right for everybody. It is. You know, I may mention the fact that you skipped over the hard part. I never encourage someone to use Linux unless they've asked me about it first, or they've in one way or another indicated that they're dissatisfied with Windows or Mac or whatever they're using today. And the first thing I will ask someone who is interested in exploring Linux is why. And if they are saying they're bored or they're just fed up or they're tired of having viruses and spyware and all kinds of stuff, that's when I'll recommend Linux and recommend that they look into it. I think that the biggest hurdle today compared with Windows and Mac is that that Linux has is that it's not as available pre-installed on computer hardware as Windows and Mac are. And that's really the biggest hurdle for many people is the fear of installing an operating system. And in, you know, when I was helping with Windows, I was installing Windows every day, almost. It seemed like it, at least Windows 95, Windows 98, and beyond into Windows 7. And so I was installing and running up against the same hardware incompatibility issues, driver issues that most people never experience because they buy their Windows hardware from a vendor who's already pre-installed it and used an image where they know exactly what the drivers are and it's already pre-configured for that hardware. And so most users never have to worry about that unless they upgrade their version of Windows. And then they're likely to run into the same sort of problems that you would experience in installing from scratch. You know, when people ask my recommendation generally for computers or computer operating system, again, I ask them, what do you do on your computer? And if they say mainly browsing the internet and maybe some banking and, you know, occasionally, you know, I'll want to use email or things like that, I'll actually recommend a Chromebook because that is the
it's
thing
the cheap
that
alternative
is the,
at this point. Yes.
Yeah, exactly. And if they want a computer that runs Windows, then buy one that runs Windows. If they want something to get them away from the viruses and spyware, but they really don't, they're not the kind of person that wants to experiment around, then Mac OS is the way to go. Or Chrome, if they're not wanting to run standalone apps. And only after that, if I get the right vibe from them, that they might be a good candidate for Linux, then I bring up the subject and it goes from there. Either they say, nope, I'm not interested, or tell me a little bit more about this thing. I've really heard of it. It used to be I've never heard of it. Now I'm getting more, I've heard of Linux, but I really don't know what it's about. Can you explain it to me?
And so you basically, when you're aiming to help someone, you're sort of thinking as the approach of, you're giving them the right tool for the job, basically.
Absolutely.
So you're not going to recommend Linux to someone who wouldn't be successful in Linux.
Right. I'm a Linux advocate and an open source advocate. I'm not a zealot.
Exactly. And I think that's important. I think the open source philosophy is an incredible philosophy. You know, there are people out there that live by that philosophy. There are people out there that use Linux just for the free software. And I think finding the balance in between that is really important. You can't really push it down people's throats and, you know, make them want to do it because they just won't. They have to want to learn how to use Linux. And do you have a favorite going Linux story of somebody who switched to Linux that ended up being very successful with it?
You know, I can't say I have a favorite. There are a lot of them out there. We've had them on the show. I guess my favorite is the one that I haven't heard yet.
Oh, that's a good answer. That's really great.
Because they're always good ones, you know?
Yeah, just today, I work at a major tourist attraction in my area and in the summertime. And I sort of have staff that I supervise, and most of them are pretty young kids at this point. And I think it was yesterday, one of the young kids said, I just bought a Chromebook, and a friend of mine helped me put Linux on the Chromebook. And I was like, you know, he's probably 16 years old. And I was like, way to go. You know, good, you know, way to make that Chromebook a little more useful for you, you know, instead of having just a web browser, you know. And so that was sort of exciting to see Linux at that point, where it's available. High school kids are using it, and I do have students of mine that dabble in Linux on their own. So it's exciting to see and hear about those stories once in a while. And for you, I think you've been pretty busy lately. You have been putting out a few books recently. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So how I got started writing books is I started off helping Jonathan Nadeau with the
incredible
distribution
guy, by the way.
With the distribution of Linux that he put out for disabled people, specifically for blind people, and helped him with his website a little bit, but more importantly, wrote a book, an electronic book, a manual, if you will, for the operating system. And that was kind of a one-time thing. I think I did two versions of it, but
Can you remind me the name of that OS again? Do you remember what it is?
You know what? I was trying to think of it myself, and
it's been a couple of years since I heard it, and I just couldn't see it. But if you don't remember, that's okay.
No, it was Vinix was not his. That was the other one that was designed for blind people. And I can't remember. It's not coming to me.
That's
it'll
okay.
Probably as soon as we finish the podcast, it'll come back to me.
The email it to me. I'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah, there you go. And so that was the first time I had written documentation for Linux. I had written documentation for all kinds of other things prior to that. So I had a history in writing technical documentation. And so it was kind of natural for me to do that. But then, based on listening to my podcast, based on listening to the my reports of what I had done for Sonar
that's
Linux,
it.
That's,
yep,
it.
That's it.
So what I had done for Jonathan, I was approached by the person who runs the Ubuntu Mate project, and that's Martin Wimpress. He sent me an email and said, listen, I'm really struggling to get the right words for the welcome page on the website. And we're writing this welcome application, and we'd like your help. You seem to be able to capture the essence of what we want to say, and I'd like you to write those words. And so I did. And so some of the words that are now in the welcome application in Ubuntu Mate are mine. Most of them are his and his team, small team. But some of the words that are on the website are from my vocabulary as well. And then based on that, I thought, you know what? I did a manual for Sonar. And one of the things that's missing in all Linux distributions, almost all Linux distributions, is good documentation. And the good documentation that the average computer user can read. That was my objective. Keep it the same kind of objective as a Going Linux podcast.
Yeah, the average user isn't going to go through a man page and read the documentation there.
Exactly. So I wrote the first book from the perspective of a new Linux user. And what I really wanted to do is provide something that would give somebody the ability to have a high-level overview and not go into a lot of detail. So just kind of a taste of why you would want to switch from anything else, whether that's, you know, Chrome or Windows or macOS, to Linux. Just here's what Ubuntu Mate is, here's what it can do, and here's why you might want to switch. And just leave it at that. So I did that. And then I thought, okay, well, I've got more in me than that. I've got a whole, multiple years, over 10 years of podcasting about Linux, and including articles on the website. I can repurpose those articles, repurpose what I did for Ubuntu Mate from the welcome screen and everything else. And let's put those into a little more depth and build a book from all those elements that is kind of what you might have found back in the 90s when you first bought an IBM clone PC and you got this cardboard binder of documentation that said, here's your hardware, here's the buttons and switches, here's what these lights indicate, and here's the DOS operating system, and here's the Windows operating system, and here's the application for word processing and various other applications. and provide that kind of a thing, but not from a technical detail perspective, but provide it from a new user perspective.
Yeah.
And so that's how the Using Ubuntu Mate and its Applications book was born.
How long did it take you to from, you know, writing the first words to publishing? How long was that process?
Since I had a lot of the documentation, it probably went a lot faster than it might otherwise if I had to write it all from scratch. But I took a long time to edit it. And so I would say under a year, probably more like 6 months. And that was doing it part-time while working full-time on a job and doing this nights and weekends. So 6 to 9 months, I'd say.
And from my perspective, when I first heard about these books, I actually went out and bought copies of the books. And shortly after that, we actually exchanged emails and we had a contest on the show and we gave away a couple of the books. So thank you for letting us do that. We were really excited to be able to do that for you. I read both books. I thought they were fantastic, especially for that beginning Linux user that may be trying Ubuntu Mate for the first time. As mm-hmm. I mentioned earlier, I started with Ubuntu 9.04 back in the GNOME 2 days, and Ubuntu Mate has always been one of my favorite distros just because of that look and feel of the old style Ubuntu from you know, well, especially I think 10.04 was one of my favorites at the time. And Ubuntu Mate really brings that feel and the modern updates that come along with it. And
right.
And Martin Wimpress, I've listened to him on other podcasts. I don't know him personally, but seems like a really genuine, down-to-earth person. And really, I believe he originally made it for his family. Am I right?
Yes. Yes, that's right.
I mean, that to me is the best thing. You hear somebody doing it for their family. And, you know, you as a Linux user, Linux podcasts and writing the documentation for them, giving back to the community. That's what Linux is all about, the whole community effort. And that's what makes me really excited to use Linux, is just everybody works together and helps each other out.
Right, absolutely. And you referred to Ubuntu Mate with that old look of Ubuntu. I prefer to use the term classic look or familiar look of Ubuntu because it's not old looking.
You're right.
You know,
you're right. Yes.
You know, and when you use the word old, people think, "Hey, Windows 95 kind of old." And
yeah, that's
you know,
not
early
what I meant
days of
at all. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, I know it's not, but you know, choice of words is important, as you can imagine,
you're
from
exactly
an author.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so that classic look of Ubuntu and that classic look of Linux is there, and yet it's got modern styling and modern features. And speaking of modern, that using Ubuntu Mate and its applications, I have released a second edition. The first edition was based on 17.10, and the second edition is based on release 18.04, which is a long-term support release. And I'm hoping that because the operating system that it's based on is long-term support, my book can be long-term support, and I don't have to do another revision for another few years.
That would be great, wouldn't it?
Yeah. So what I'd like to do is I have the paperback version available for sale and the Kindle version available for sale, and I have not offered this anywhere else, but I have a PDF version that I will give you another PDF version or as many as you would like to give to your listeners so that they have
Thank
the
you so much.
Latest and greatest. Yeah.
I'm really excited to check that out. And as always, I will actually buy a copy too, because I like to support what you do.
No, not necessary at all, but thank you.
Where can listeners go and get your books? I know you mentioned Amazon. Where else mm-hmm. can they find your books?
Okay, so I've provided you two links in the notes that we're sharing here. One is a link to the Amazon page that has all my books on it, so if you wanted to look through them. I'm not sure why some of those listings on Amazon have the ebook and the print book grouped together and some of them don't, but that's just the way Amazon does it, I guess.
Absolutely.
So that one link gives you a link to all of the various editions of the book. So pick the one you're interested in if you're thinking of it. And if you want a free copy of my book, The latest version, I will be giving you that PDF. But if you go to this second link that I provided you, which is the goinglinux.com website, /article/UbuntuMateBook_en.htm. Now you know why I provided the the link. If you go there and you click on the pictures of the book cover, that will start a download of a free PDF version of each of those, except for the most recent version. So you can get those from my website, or if you want to support the efforts of me and Bill, feel free to go on Amazon and buy a copy of the print version or buy a copy of the ebook version, and have fun.
And for those of you listening to the show right now, what I will do is I will put these links in the show notes. So feel free to check those out after. And so you don't have to go back and write down the link.
There you go.
So let's just talk about, so we started with Mandrake back in 04, I think you said. What Linux distro are you currently using?
Ubuntu Mate 18.04.
So I
am steeped in Ubuntu Mate. I know it so well.
So I figured it was Ubuntu Mate, seeing how you wrote the books. So that's your everyday driver. Are there any other projects that you get excited about, you enjoy learning about?
Well, you know, if it weren't for Ubuntu Mate, I think Linux Mint would be the one that I would recommend. And if you've listened to the recent episodes of the Going Linux podcast, you'll note that Bill recently reviewed Linux Mint 19. And switched to it for that review and has refused to leave it. I give him another week because he just switches it, switches distributions, but he's stuck with this one a long time and he really likes it. And I would say that, Linux Mint is probably the easiest to learn and use, besides Ubuntu Mate.
And Linux Mint 19 is just beautiful. Yeah. If you haven't tried it, it's just incredible.
It's absolutely gorgeous. I love the way they've implemented their own tools, for some of the utilities. And I actually prefer the backup utility that they have to the one that's in Ubuntu Mate. A backup utility is not enough to make me switch, but, you know, there are, and that's the great thing with Linux is you can always find great, features in one versus another, and there's no cost to trying them out. There's no penalty to trying them out either financially or anything else because it's very easy to try them on live media these days, live USB.
And you know what?
Or live CD.
I hopped around for a while. Like I mentioned, I started with Ubuntu, and I went to DistroWatch, like a lot of Linux users do, and checked out what the latest and greatest operating systems that were Linux-based were. I tried some BSD-based operating systems. And, you know, over time, I learned what I liked. I learned what I didn't like. And certain Linux distros offer certain package managers. Others offer certain types of software. You know, everybody's going to find their own distro that they really like to use and the ones that they don't like to use. I actually ended up on Arch for a really long time. And then I've been on Antergos for a couple of years now. I like the Arch package manager. And but boy, Linux Mint 19 is really tempting. And Ubuntu Mate is also one that I recommend. I usually go back and forth between Linux Mint and Ubuntu Mate for new Linux users or you know, somebody who's just looking for a rock solid stable machine that isn't going to change much.
Right. I think that Linux Mint is great from the perspective that no matter what desktop environment you choose, whether it's GNOME or XFCE or Cinnamon, they all look the same, basically, and they all work the same. The applications may be for that desktop environment, but it's basically the same functionality, and they've done an excellent job of maintaining consistency across the desktops. What I like, on the flip side of that, what I like about Ubuntu Mate is the fact that they've made it very easy to change the look and feel of Ubuntu Mate by changing not just the themes, but the panel layouts as well, so that you can have that Linux Mint look and feel. You can have a look and feel that behaves like Windows, like Mac, like the traditional old school, if you will, GNOME interface, or you can have it look completely different. And it's very easy to set up with the tools that they have. And I find myself switching around the desktop without having to switch in,
I think that's one of the most,
distributions.
I think that's one of the most compelling aspects of Ubuntu Mate is, mm-hmm. is switching between the Redmond and all the other different styles. And just gives you an overall feeling of just how customizable Linux can be, and they do all the hard work for you, and you don't
have
and that's what I love about Ubuntu Mate. And maybe I'll put some links in the show notes for anybody interested in trying Linux Mint or Ubuntu Mate too, because I think it's so easy to install Linux on a flash drive now and install it on your computer. You know, you can use something like Etcher, and three clicks, mm-hmm. you basically have a bootable live system on a flash drive. So it's so easy to try Linux. So we talked a little bit about Linux in the past. We've talked about how we both got started. What do you think of the current state of Linux, and what are some of your favorite things that have come up recently in the Linux world that just get you excited still about Linux?
The fact that the thing that gets me most excited, I think, is the fact that it is still the one operating system that has the fewest problems with malware and infections and all of that. And I attribute that to the fact that when it was first designed, even as Unix, it was designed for multiple users, and it was designed with security in mind because it was designed for multiple users. And it really excites me that Linux is still the top of the heap for that. And some would say that it's because it's least popular. The virus writers don't write viruses for it. I'm not sure that's absolutely true. It's extremely popular as a server-based operating system, and I would expect that if somebody really wanted to do some damage, they would write some sort of malware that would infect the servers, and yet servers are just as difficult to infect as desktops when they're running Linux. So I'm quite proud of the fact that Linux is that secure, knock on wood.
I can't remember the numbers, but I think I remember reading somewhere that it must have been in the mid 90% of all the servers in the world are Linux based. It just goes to show you that security is there, and as long as you sort of, I would personally refrain from running if you're not familiar with Linux, not running your own Linux server, unless you really know how to keep it secure and up to date, keep it just like anything else. But all the servers in the world are basically running off of Linux, and the people that maintain them, they know how to keep everything safe and maintained well. And Linux has just secure from the ground up. And so in the server world, it's secure, and that's one of the reasons why I use it sort of in my desktop world is I like to do my banking on Linux. I don't like to, I feel safer using Linux, and that's a big thing for a lot of people.
Yeah, and the other thing, security side, I think the other thing that I am most proud of, or the thing that excites me about Linux, is it's getting more publicity. Sometimes open source is portrayed in the media and by Hollywood as this big bad boogeyman of, it's open source and, that's really bad. And, it should be proprietary to protect the assets and all that sort of stuff. Well, the thing that I like about Linux is that it is getting more publicity. That misinformation is being dispelled. It is being portrayed a little bit less as the hacker's operating system and more as something that average people might like to use. But I still think that marketing and public awareness of Linux is still its weakest point. And I think with the right set of, marketing power behind it, Linux could be a lot more well adopted than it is today.
And I completely agree with you there. And speaking of weak links, what are some things that you feel sort of need to improve with Linux. So is there any aspect of Linux that you'd like to see made better? As we mentioned earlier, no OS is perfect, and
right.
we all hit the bumps once in a while. What are some of the bumps that you come across?
Yeah, most of the bumps are around adoption and awareness, and I think that's really the weak link. I think that from a Linux as a product or as an operating system, I think it's moving ahead at a rapid pace. I think that more of the distributions, I would like to see more distributions take the tack of Linux Mint and Ubuntu Mate and Ubuntu in general in trying to make their operating system more approachable and quit feeding into it's the operating system for geeks. Yes, there's a lot of geek cred to be had by using a hacker's operating system, but come on, if we want to have this thing adopted by people, we've got to make it more approachable. And yeah, that I think would be what I would call on Linux developers. Well, that's not really the developers, but the companies or the organizations that are sponsoring or are behind Linux, whatever that Linux distribution is, if they could be more like Linux Mint and more like the Ubuntu crowd, I think it would be better. Now, each of those organizations has their, downfalls or their weaknesses, or they're not perfect either, but I'm just saying to be more like them from the perspective of making the operating system more approachable.
Absolutely. And I think the hard work that you do with your show is helping with that and making people feel like, you know what, maybe I'll give that Linux thing a try. So let's say somebody listening to this show wants to get a hold of you or check out some of your materials that you put out. How can they get a hold of you, and where can they go to find out all of your publications?
Sure. So goinglinux.com is the name of the website. Just go there. And there's a lot of resources there for you to use to learn about Linux. You can find right on the main page there a listen button, so you can listen to the latest episode. Subscribe in your software that you use for subscribing to podcasts. And you'll find also on that front page links to our pages on the books, and you can link from that page to Amazon if you want, or you can use the links that I have provided. If you just want to email directly, you can email both Bill and me at goinglinux@gmail.com. And, we haven't had voicemail in a long time. I'm not saying that's the best way to connect with us, but if you really do want to connect with us on our voicemail line, that's 1-904-468-7889. Yes, that's a Florida number. Neither one of us is in Florida, but it's a Google Voice number, and that's the area code that was available.
Hey.
So, yeah, there you go.
Well, Larry, thanks so much for coming on the show today. It was a pleasure to get to finally talk with you and to talk with Linux.
Oh, absolutely. I've enjoyed it. Thank you.
And I really enjoyed having you on. And good luck to your show. I've been a long-time listener. And hopefully some of my friends who listen to this podcast will check out your show. And so hopefully you had a good time tonight. And for those of you listening
Absolutely.
To the show, you can subscribe to my RSS feed. Link will be in the show notes. If you have questions for me or for Larry, you can send them my way too. It's mrptechreviews@gmail.com. You can check out my website, mrptechreviews.com. And I just want to give a shout out and thank Podnuts for all their hard work. Door-to-Door Geek does a lot of things behind the scenes. And one of the hardest working guys that I know does everything for Podnuts. And just a big thank you to him. So go to podnuts.com and show them some love by hitting that donate button and helping support the network. So that's going to do it for this week's episode. Thanks again, Larry. Hopefully we'll be in touch, and feel free to contact me anytime, and maybe we can talk Linux again in the future.
I'd look forward to it. Thanks.
And for all of you guys listening to the show, thanks guys for listening. We will see you next time.